Okay, so I'm Aubrey Dahlbeck, and I'm going to tell you the tale of what was my master's thesis. So I'm working on a PhD now at NIU, or eventually I'll start working. So my master's thesis was on the geomorphology and soils on these relict paraglacial landforms that we have in north central Illinois. So some background that you'll need. So Illinois has been glaciated a lot. Most recently, this Wisconsin Age glaciation that kind of reached its fullest extent where we're at in DeKalb about 23,000 years ago. So on the right-hand side, those are just like recessional and terminal moraines. So that's just where the ice stopped for a little bit. And then, okay, so sometimes landforms can be created. So there's these flat-topped, low-relief, kind of pancake-looking landforms that are ubiquitous in DeKalb County in northern Illinois. So on the right-hand side, I circled them in green. On the left-hand side, you can kind of see better. They've got these light-colored rims and then a kind of flatter interior. So they're the low-relief mounds. And they've been identified as ice-walled lake plains. So they form on the glacier. You have these supraglacial lakes that get water from precip or fluvial systems on top of the glacier, and then lake sediment gets carried in with that water. So that's going to be your silt and clays kind of at the bottom of the lake, and then as eventually the glacier melted or retreated, that lake sediment becomes this perched ice-walled lake plain, so it's this topographic inversion that we see a lot with glacial landforms. And they were first mapped by Clayton and Cherry, so in the Dakotas and Minnesota. On the left-hand side is where they've been mapped in Illinois. So again, along where the glacier kind of stagnated, you can find them. But what I specifically looked at are these landforms that are inside ice-walled lake plains. So again, on the right-hand side, the ice-walled lake plains are in blue, and then in green inside of them, they've kind of got these belly buttons that I highlighted, and they're very, very low relief, so they're just like a foot maybe above the rest of the ice-walled lake plain. And again, so the ice-walled lake plains are ubiquitous in the area, and then in the ice-walled lake plains you commonly see these superimposed landforms that I studied. And a couple of people, you know, have specifically studied the ice-walled lake plains, and they've noted these parasitic mounds or satellite mounds, but no one has investigated as to their origins or the soil properties within them. So that's what I did for my master's thesis. So I have two broad sets of hypotheses. One is that these little superimposed landforms are also glacial features, so forming in the same time span as the ice-walled lake plains themselves and probably just another generation of ice-walled lake plain, so inside the big ones. And again, so they would have formed in the same way as those big ice-walled lake plains. You get a superglacial lake that accumulates these fine-grained sediments, and then eventually the glacier melts and they're left as this perched area. So same idea. So I had a collection of ice-walled lake plains by a colleague in the department, and then I used ArcMap to identify my superimposed landforms, and I measured both of them. So perimeter-wise, ice-walled lake plains, the sample set that we had, they're a ton bigger than the superimposed landforms. They're like three times the size. And then their length and width was also statistically significantly bigger than my superimposed landforms. So another thing that we did was we cored this specific ice-walled lake plain that has superimposed landforms. And if you can see on the right, those stars are just noting where we took our cores from. So we made sure that we got the rim of the ice-walled lake plain, the interior, the rim of these superimposed landforms, the interior of them, all in our cores. And when I did a general description of them, they all had luss over lake sediment over the diamictin or the till, but there was never kind of a second layer of lacustrine sediment anywhere. So I threw out that hypothesis that these little belly buttons were also ice-walled lake plains. Because ice-walled lake plains in general are so much bigger, I didn't see that second layer of lacustrine sediment. And then if they are a younger generation of ice-walled lake plain, I don't know as to where that second age of ice would have come from to suddenly create that lake, and if they're older, they wouldn't have that raised topography because they would have gotten covered by that second ice-walled lake plain. So then we have this second set of hypotheses, that they're periglacial, so frost mounds. So periglacial would just mean a cold environment where you have permafrost. In my case, in northern Illinois, this would have happened after the glaciation, so 12, 10, 8,000 years ago. So one type of frost mound that I compared my superimposed landforms to is called lithulsas. So they happen commonly in peaty areas. You can see on the right, that's in Quebec, I think. And they form as this mound that occurs as permafrost kind of aggrades or like grows inward and then pushes soil up. So these are some relic lithulsas that have been mapped primarily in Belgium. That's just where they study them a lot. So they've got the shape that I was looking for with that rim on the outside and then a lower flat interior. Their size I liked better to fit with my superimposed landforms. So if you can see on that table, that's a collection of different studies that have measured lithulsas, and that range is like 200 to 400 meters in width. So then my landforms that I measured ranged like 40 to 200 meters in width. So mine fit into that size-wise. One thing that superimposed landforms that I looked at didn't have in common is this idea of density. So lithulsas always appear in really close groups in a concentrated number. If you look at the second bullet point, in the Northwest Territories of Canada, they studied them, and they have this density there of like 10 per square kilometer. And then mine, when I measured and did those calculations, the density isn't even close. It was like 0.1 per square kilometer. So that didn't match up. And then, not to get too periglacial landformy, but lithulsas commonly form with these things called pulsas that solely form in organic matter or peat. So I would have probably found a layer of peat if they were lithulsas, because there probably would have been pulses around them. Additionally, that second point, the type of ice that lithulsas use to grow, it doesn't need a saturated sediment like that lake basin would have had. And then again, the density is really concentrated in lithulsas, so I threw that idea out. So now this gets us to the winter. So the second type of frost mound that I have are pingos, so that's what I think they are. So these are created by intrusive ice. Again, the idea of a grading or growing permafrost that someone earlier talked about, water moving to the freezing front, so it all kind of collects, and there's these ice lenses, and then again makes this frost mound. I liked pingos for a few reasons, but one is that they do need a sort of saturated sediment, so it makes sense that these would have formed in those old lake basins where you do still have saturated sediment underneath of it. So on the left, this is in the Tuktoyaktuk Peninsula in northern Alaska. So those are three pingos that are now growing in a lake basin, okay, so that's kind of analogous to what I think happened in my area. And again, a relic example looks how I'd want it to look. So it's got that rim and then a lower lying interior. So size-wise, these matched up better than lithulsas or ice-walled lake plains. This circularity index is what it sounds like. It's how circular something is. That was similar. Diameters were similar in length. And then I liked this too. It exhibits the same pattern as pingos, where my superimposed landforms, they get less circular as you get larger. Okay, so that's what this is demonstrating. And then this was really probably the winner. So remember, the lithulsas are really concentrated, and pingos are not very concentrated. So you've got a plethora of examples, but the ones I circled are pingos that formed in thaw lake basins, so analogous to what we would have had, and those densities are like 0.1 to 0.3, and again, if you recall, mine was 0.1, so that matches up really well, so I liked that. Okay, so then my conclusion, I guess, geomorphically, is that these superimposed landforms are pingos, so I came to that conclusion based on some size measurements I took. the density, the fact that they're only in lake basins, so they probably needed that type of intrusive ice to form. And then, as I mentioned, in the glacial portion, the sediment, in that there wasn't like two layers of lacustrine sediment. So pingos need permafrost to form. That's integral to either those lithoses that I had thrown out or pingos, again, because they form by growing or grading permafrost. And previously, people have mapped ice wedge casts in our area, so we kind of thought that there had already been permafrost there after the last glaciation. But then we specifically went and found pattern ground. This is just a couple of miles away from my study site. So this to us kind of proved that there had been permafrost in the area, and so therefore that there could be pingos. So my kind of process model of all of this, to summarize the first part, is again that there would have been this ice-walled lake 23,000 years ago, and then eventually as the ice melted, it would have left perch sediment that makes this ice-walled lake plain. And importantly, underneath it, some of that sediment is still saturated because the lake was kind of like insulating it. So that saturated sediment is really key because then the permafrost has something to kind of like grow into. And it ends up making this ice core in a certain portion of the ice-walled lake plain, and again, just this frost mound creation. So hydrostatic pressure, or the moving, like water wants to move to the freezing front, so it just pushed this mound up that had relief. So, okay, and this is, yeah, corn DeKalb, so this is what it looks like now. That's what we do, that's all we do. This low-relief ice-walled lake plain, so maybe that's just, I mean, these, if you're not from the Midwest, this is probably really lame landforms. So these are just like 3 foot above the surrounding area, and then mine are just like a foot above that ice-walled lake plain. So I think it's really cool, but if you're from like the mountains, probably not. Okay, so where's the soils at? So one thing that we did was also take cores across other ice-walled lake plains. So just a general trend that we have found is that on those higher relief rims that are the outside of the ice-walled lake plains, you get alphasols, okay, and then in that lower relief, we've found more mollisols, so that's depicted here. Again, the transect just going across. And then one other thing that you'll note is this kind of wonky change in lust thickness, so we can't really... We don't have an explanation for that, but you do see the increase in organic carbon in the interior of the ice-walled lake plain, and again, the appearance of mollic epipedons in the interior. So, okay, I guess. So this specific coring was done on one that we have named Mr. Peanut, so that's why it's MRP at the top. So on the rims of the ice-walled lake plain, again, you get alphasols. But what also happens is, you know, you don't see the lacustrine sediment yet. So on the rims, you're going to get this lust over this glacio-fluvial sediment over the diamictin or the Tiscola till, okay? But then as you move inward and you are actually in the lake, you're going to have lust, glacio-fluvial, and then glacio-lacustrine. And I like that. I think that's cool, but it poses a problem to soil survey because we don't have a specific soil series or map unit in northern Illinois that has all three of those together in that order. So, again, my first conclusion was that these superimposed landforms are relict pingos that formed in the bigger ice-walled lake plains, analogous to things that are happening in like northern Alaska. And then we found that soils occur in a fairly predictable way across the ice-walled lake plains. Again, it's those like alphasols on the rim, mollisols in the interior. And now that we kind of know that and we've got these more advanced tools, we can probably map that better and maybe even create a map unit that displays the complexity of what's happening in these kind of small areas. So thank you, my advisor, Mike. Brandon Curry at the ISGS is really big into this stuff, so he helped us a lot. And I guess you'll note we don't have any grants, so if you guys have some heavy pocketbooks, maybe you could help us out. So that's it.